This is Shambhala Sun, editor of web publications Rod Mead Sperry, and you're listening to Shambhala Sun Audio. Eat, Pray, Love, and Marry. That's the title of the Q&A in the January 2010 issue of the Shambhala Sun, featuring, of course, Elizabeth Gilbert, whose book Eat, Pray, Love is certainly one of the more famous spiritual books of recent years. It spent 57 weeks at the top spot of the New York Times nonfiction bestsellers list. It's even being made into a film starring Julia Roberts. Gilbert's new book is called Committed, A Skeptic Makes Peace with Marriage. She spoke about marriage, sex, and more for her Q&A with The Sun's Andrea Miller. In this Shambhala Sun audio clip, you'll hear some of their discussion, featuring bits found in the January 2010 Q&A and from elsewhere in their 30-minute-long conversation.
What would you say is the most difficult aspect of marriage?
You know what, I think that depends person to person. The one thing that became very clear to me in researching and pondering this book was that any thought that you have going into marriage that you're not going to be sacrificing something is ignorant. You know, like there's a sacrifice that's intrinsic in that kind of selection, you know, sort of like you draw a circle around yourself and the other person, and a lot of things are excluded from that circle, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that depending on who you are, there will be different things that might feel painful about that. Like, I have a friend who's been very happily married for 20 years, and she's a terrific mom, and she, you know, she loves this guy, but she really feels this sort of amputation, she calls it, of monogamy. You know, it's really, there's an anguish for her in that. I mean, not a constant torment, but she just feels like there's a part of herself that has died along with the marriage, which isn't to say that they don't have a sexual life together, but that there are severe limits in what that is and what that can be. And she's willing to make that sacrifice, but it hurts. There's parts of herself that she can't explore because of that, you know. That doesn't strike me as problematic. You know, I'm more likely to think about the loss of independence, you know, which isn't to say that I don't have a really supportive and encouraging husband, but there are restrictions that I place on my own comings and goings because I'm married. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to go travel around the world by myself for a year right now. You know, that's not something that I can do, mm-hmm. Or that I would do.
So what would you say is the greatest joy then?
I think the greatest joy is being known so intimately, almost invisibly, as I said in the book, where you become so essential and invisible in somebody's life. And maybe invisibility seems like a bad thing. There's something really lovely about that, too. You know, you never have to sort of reintroduce yourself. You're not auditioning, you know, which is how I always sort of felt about dating. You know, I remember something that my husband said to me very early on when we met. We were sitting at dinner. We were eating pizza together, and I had gorged myself on this pizza, and there was one piece left. And I was sort of wavering and saying, God, I really shouldn't have this, but I really, really want it. And, you know, I don't want to put on weight, but I really love this. And he just looked at me and he said, I've got a really good idea. Why don't you just be yourself? You know, and it was such a call of liberation in a way to discover that there was somebody with whom I could just, you know, without any consequences, just be who I am.
So what constitutes a healthy relationship?
Oh, God. I don't know if I know the answer to that question, or I certainly don't know if I could answer that for anybody else. I know what constitutes an unhealthy relationship in my particular psychological makeup. You know,
what's that?
For me, it's, you know, anything that has the taint of infatuation, the kind of half insane fever, where you sort of become a homunculus, where you use somebody else as your host body. You know, you kind of like impale yourself on them and you want to disappear into them. I mean, I have had a tendency in the past to do that when I fall kind of madly in love with somebody. And it's very romantic and it's very exciting, but it's also degrading and devastating and ultimately kind of aggressive to the other person, if that makes sense, because there's an aggression in how you're using them, you know. It's an assault in a way, and you end up, because of course you're not seeing them and you're not permitting them to be who they are, you're sort of insisting that they fulfill this fantasy that you've created and projected on them. You know, but these are all things that I have to work on in my own life. I think what constitutes a healthy relationship is anything that opens up enough space within you that you can be as close to, you know, the best version of yourself that you can possibly be, and where you can strip away the unnecessary dross. And love can do that.
How important do you think sex is in a relationship?
It's really important for me. you know, I think, you know, obviously we live in a society that has sort of unfairly tilted the scales on that. You know, we do live in a culture where sex is both everywhere and also so inflated and misconstrued that, you know, your average 10-year-old knows everything about it and your average 40-year-old knows nothing about it. You know, like, because there's just all this sort of misinformation and it's all about advertising and it's all, you know, and there's a lot of it that makes people feel bad about themselves. So I think that one of the sort of dangerous expectations that people go into with marriage is this idea that your sex life should be, after 20 years together, what it was after 20 days together. And I just feel like that's a huge burden to put on two people. It seems like a lot of work to keep that up, you know. You know, I had somebody ask me recently, like, do you still have hot animalistic sex with your husband? And I thought, well, first of all, in New Jersey, animalistic sex is illegal. but you know, the bigger point is I won't inflict on him the requirement that he provide that for decades on end. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a friend who's been, she's now 70, and she married a man who is about 15 years younger than her. And they've been married for 35 years now at this point, and it started off as this enormously passionate sexual relationship, and she said, you know, we've kind of dried up in that, but we've expanded in other ways, and it's not a problem for either one of us. We don't really miss it. We're really affectionate with each other physically. You know, we express that love in other ways, but both of us are sort of kind of old and creaky and tired, and we enjoy doing other things with each other now, you know, and I think that's fine, too, as long as it's okay. You know, the problem is when you get this imbalance where somebody is filled with longing and frustration and the other person has no desire left.
What do you think is the connection between spirituality and sex or perhaps desire?
You know, I remember going to a yoga conference once and somebody else asked this monk, do you think sex is good or bad? You know, which is, of course, in itself a very narrow and Western question, you know, like many energy sources, you know, including sex, money, you know, those sorts of energy sources are neither good nor bad. They're sort of tofu, right? They kind of, they're an energy source that takes on the flavor of whatever you add to it, you know, whatever you make into it. We try to take these things like money, for instance, and be like, you know, money is evil or money is great. It's neither evil nor great, you know. It can be either, depending on what you do with it. And sex is the same way. And I remember what she said was so important to me to hear at that time when I was still really young and sort of doing careless things with myself sexually. She said, first of all, I don't know why you're asking somebody who's been celibate for 30 years, you know, to answer this question. But since you asked, I'll do my best. And she said, the important thing to remember is not to make a judgment as to whether sex is good or bad, but to just know that it's extremely powerful and that you will leave a part of yourself with the person that you have had sex with. That happens on an intangible level that goes beyond bodily fluids and exchange phone numbers. You know, like there's an exchange of your being that is permanent, you know, and that person will walk away and take a piece of you with him, and you will walk away and be carrying with you forever a piece of that person. And that being the case, choose very carefully who you do this with, you know, because that's going to happen regardless of whether you're paying attention to it or not. And I think sometimes that promiscuity is this way that you sort of, you're leaving pieces of your soul sort of spread out all over the place in really careless hands, you know, with people who maybe shouldn't be trusted with it, you know. And so that's the beginning of mature sexuality, I think, is recognizing that.
That was best-selling author Elizabeth Gilbert, author of the new book Committed, A Skeptic Makes Peace with Marriage, in discussion with Shambhala Sun Associate Editor Andrea Miller. You'll find more questions and answers with the best-selling writer on page 23 of the January 2010 issue of the Shambhala Sun. This is Rod Mead Sperry. Thanks, as always, for listening to Shambhala Sun Audio.